are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
How can you not love the WBC? I mean, honk ball. That's what's going on right now.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Worked for the Cardinals for a couple of years.
Do you still have passwords to log into their system, too? Or?
I have guesses.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
That's not a bias take at all.
No, not at all.
I don't think that was the password.
No. That's what it said in some Deadspin report. It was like Eckstein 123 or some crap like that.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome in to episode 240 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. And with me tonight is our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Excited for today's guest, man. And you know, we're just sitting here watching WBC, which I feel bad. I kind of shit on the WBC earlier this offseason, but I don't know how I'd be getting through it because my bracket's busted already, so it's getting me through this. Spring training isn't really doing it, so this is definitely filling that baseball void for me. It's been great.
For sure. Anybody that has said anything bad about the WBC prior to this season, I'm included, has to really feel like it's turning around, because this has been one of the better, you know, definitely a great way to start this season, but also just a great way to, you know, get back into the rhythm of baseball after having multiple months of, you know, winter and football and everything. It's just a really nice start off point. So I'm very happy with the product we've seen. I think a lot of people are kind of changing their tune on the WBC, but anyways, our guest today is somebody I'm really excited about. He's a fellow Baseball HQ contributor, and since it is relief pitcher week on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, the way that we can keep it way, way better, more interesting than usual is by having Doug Dennis on. So, Doug, how are you doing, and welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. How can you not love the WBC? I mean, honk ball. That's what's going on right now.
Yeah, the other day when USA was playing, it was outrageous. It was absolutely outrageous. Just in the stands, all the crowd. It was kind of insane how often we kept hearing horns and stuff, and just the amount of everybody gets into it. So I think that it means a lot more to other countries than us. But at the same time, it's just really a really nice way to kind of get things going. But
we just need to get the best American players to play now, and then it'll be set.
It would be nice. It definitely would be nice. Yeah. But Doug, for those that don't know you, give us kind of a background of, you know, what you do for the industry. One of the best things that you do, in my opinion, is the Bullpen Buyer's Guide on baseballhq.com. But yeah, just give everybody just kind of a brief synopsis on Doug Dennis and where they can find you, et cetera.
Well, you can find me on Baseball HQ, or I'm on Twitter at DougDennis41. But all I do is I write an article a week for them on bullpens, and I'm in labor. I've been in labor for a long time. That's an expert league that USA Today runs, and that's really about it these days. I've contributed from time to time to USA Today and ESPN, worked for the Cardinals for a couple of years, but that's really it.
Worked for the Cardinals for a couple of years. What did you do for them?
Help them with player analysis just for 2 years, though. That was about 10 years ago.
Didn't Rob Sandler do the same thing? Or am I wrong?
Yep, same time. Nope, you're absolutely right. There were about six of us that were all gathered up by Jeff Lunau at the time. He was he had just started with the Cardinals at that point in time before his career rocketed to where he's GM of the Astros now. But yeah. Things were different back then, so...
Do you still have passwords to log into their system, too? Or?
I have guesses.
Yeah, I had to say that. I'm a Cardinals fan, so I was upset with the laissez-faire attitude, the attitude Astros had about it. And, you know, so long story short, I think the Cardinals were unjustly punished, but that's okay.
That's not a biased take at all.
No, not at all. I queued it up, so I let you know. I threw that out of there in front of it. I mean, I get that they shouldn't have done it, and I obviously doing it multiple times is on Correa, but I mean, Astros have to take some responsibility for having David Eckstein 123 to be your password, right? I mean, come on.
I don't think that was the password.
That's what it said in some Deadspin report. It was like Eckstein 123 or some crap like that. But
I highly doubt that.
Me too, but that's what it said.
All right. Let's get this thing going, because I don't know how often I can talk about the whole Cardinals debacle. It's absolutely absurd, but you learn something new every day. Matt, where can we reach you on Twitter and such before we get going?
Yeah, MDTompFWFB.
And as usual, please rate and review the show. You can go on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators that you can listen to this program. Really helps us out. And let's get this started. So the first thing I want to talk about here is we're going to kind of do a versus right up at the top of the relief pitcher list, especially in according to ADP. We have Aroldis Chapman versus Kenley Jansen versus Zach Britton. Doug, if you had to choose between the three, which one would you go with and why?
We're really splitting hairs. Obviously, they're all really great relievers. I guess if I were going to split the hairs, I'd go for the guy who's giving me extra strikeouts, and that would be Chapman. Chapman's not going to be suspended this year that I'm aware of. At least nothing bad's happened yet. So I would probably go with him. I'd probably go Jansen second, and Britton, although he had a year for the ages last year, I don't see him repeating that. But I mean, honestly, the difference between the three is razor thin.
I absolutely agree. I had Britton number two on my relief list about a couple months ago. And then he had that oblique strain, and that really kind of scares me. Not enough to drop him outside of like my top five or anything. But I would take Jansen first because I feel like he's just a little bit more reliable and stable. But again, it is kind of splitting hairs. I love Chapman in his own right. I have no problem with any of the three options. Zach Britton's ground ball rate is the most absurd thing I've seen ever. And yeah. I don't really see that being something that, kind of goes away from his profile. So I love all three options. If I had to go with one again, I would go Jansen, but it's not really – there's no case that I can make that's strong enough to go against any of the three. Matt, do you have a case for one of these guys that you would roll with over the other three, or is there a case to be made that you wouldn't take one of these guys over the other three?
I've been spending high draft pick or dollars on a closer this year. I've been getting at least one sure thing. I've been staying out of this group, though. I've been getting guys out of the next year we're going to talk about. But if I had to take one of these guys, I'm with Doug. I'm taking Chapman. The extra strikeouts you could draft a starting pitcher that's, I can't think, like Greinke, who might not get pile up the K's, but you have Chapman, it kind of offsets it. So I'll take Chapman over these. Like you guys said, it's splitting hairs. I mean, I am a little bit worried about Chapman and Jansen's playoff workload, but I don't think there's anything to be that concerned about to lower him down. And Britton's has got the oblique, and then obviously don't have to worry about his playoff workload because he's still fresh. So for that. So yeah, give me Chapman if I have to pick.
This isn't on the notes, Doug, but are you the type of guy that likes to spend for high, price relievers in drafts, or do you tend to go for more of the bargain bin type of players? I know in labor you do a very unique strategy, but just in general, what do you do?
In general, I try to go with cheaper guys that are much more risky than this group for sure, and spend money elsewhere. But I also churn a lot, so I'm always looking to, okay, this guy was the closer, now he's out, who's the next guy, and so on. So I try to stay ahead of other teams if I can. I'm more of a quantity over quality kind of guy.
Yeah, if anybody ever looks at your labor teams, you always tend to not spend on pitching. You spent a little more on pitching this year, though, than you did last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think you ended up getting, not an ace, but like a tier down, if I'm not mistaken. How did your pitching go this year?
I got $30 worth this year. That's kind of what I aimed for. But, it's league specific. So in that particular league, there's six reserve slots, and you can spend those on pitchers too. And if you throw enough bodies at a problem, some of them end up starting, some of them end up closing, and you do okay.
Absolutely, yeah. And I like the strategy as well. I mean, I always like to pay for offense. You just do it a little bit more extreme. It's not as extreme as, like, say, the Labadini plan, which Justin, who isn't on this show, who you haven't talked to yet, Doug, he talks about the Labadini plan ad nauseum. It drives me crazy, and I'm waiting for somebody in the industry to do it in one of these big drafts, but it might be you, of all the people, but we'll see. Anyways, let's go on. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think I'll ever do that strategy because it's too extreme. I mean, you really have to make a lot of trades. You know, you're just too lopsided, where $30 gets you a lot closer. That's just how I see it with that particular league.
I agree. Let's move on to the next group of players. We have a lot to talk about in this bullpen show, so let's keep it moving. So the next group of guys, we have Craig Kimbrell versus Sungwoon Oh and Edwin Diaz. Matt, I'll throw it to you since there's a Cardinal in here. Of these three, who are you choosing and why? Or are you choosing all three?
I've had a couple of different drafts this year I've ended up with. I've had on one team, but I've been getting Edwin Diaz a lot. I've been finding him slipping a lot of in some of my drafts. I don't know why, quite frankly. I mean, I think you're getting the strikeouts what you're getting with Diaz are ridiculous compared to what you're going to get with from O. And obviously, Kimbrel is his own kind of animal. The ERA kind of with him last year slipped a little bit. I'm not too worried about that long term or anything. But if I have to rank this group, I'll go Diaz, O, and Kimbrel. And that, I think that's the reverse of how they're going in drafts. So I'm very comfortable getting any of these guys really as my top closer. I'm not going to spend on the top group that we just went over, but this group in the next year seem to be more of my wheelhouses for closers, and Owen Diaz are the two guys I like here.
Doug, I'm really interested on your take with Diaz in particular, because this is a guy that, you know, obviously has electric stuff. His strikeout per nine is among the league leaders, especially for relief pitchers. Is that the type of profile you're looking for? And would you spend on a guy like Diaz, even though he's only done it for essentially one season and not even a full season at that? Or would you more or less try and take the more reliable Craig Kimbrel, while his skills were down last year, he still was able to, you know, put up decent numbers, and he also has a track record to kind of back up his draft stock. So, like, what kind of reliever are you looking for in this tier?
I would be equally happy with Diaz or Kimbrel, but for the opposite reasons. I mean, one of the things about closers is they're like Roman candles. You know, there's not a lot of them that stick around for a long time. They kind of go and they're great for a while, and then they're not great. Kimbrel's been good for a long time. I'm not worried about, you know, his blip last year. That happens from time to time. I would say Kimbrel and Diaz are both. I mean, I'm them being lumped in the same tier makes perfect sense to me. I would want them equally. The fact that Diaz is easier or cheaper to get would sway me more than anything else. I like the fact that O is called the final boss. That says it all for me.
Yeah, that's a great nickname.
Yeah, and while he's been a little bit erratic in
he's
great.
O belongs in this group, too. I mean, they're all three. I mean, it's, you know, they're very similar. So, you know, when you have something that's this similar, I guess I would just say whoever's the cheapest of the three you can get that guy.
And so
one of my things I'm going to look for this year is kind of go off on a little bit different subject here. Edwin Diaz, man, you pitching prospect with the Mariners, and they kind of got a lot of criticism for switching which was at the time their top prospect in a really weak system, and they switched him to the reliever, and, you know, obviously he was on the fast track then. They got a lot of criticism for it, but I mean, I don't see how you can criticize him now. I mean, it's almost like a Aroldis Chapman light numbers you're seeing here in this half season. He put up 15.3 strikeouts per nine innings. It's nuts. So one of the things I'm going to look for this year, I'm going to try to find, you know, the next Edwin Diaz among starting pitching prospects. I know that's a really hard thing to say, but you look for a guy with 2+ pitches that doesn't have a third, and I think you can turn to the bullpen and see if they get in the right situation. So that's something I'm going to pay attention to a lot this year, try to unearth somebody like that. I mean, it's going to be really difficult, but, I mean, with what Diaz did last year at no cost, I mean, anybody in Dynasty League that had him when he was on the end of your farm roster because he was pitching prospects with the Mariners that had so-so strikeout numbers, I mean, he wasn't that exciting. But, man, the slider and the fastball really took off in short stints.
I do want to ask this because...
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think if you know ahead of time that a team's going to convert a guy, then you have to pay attention to that. I mean, there's always prospects that are, you know, this is actually, Dylan Betances was a bit like this. Wade Davis was a bit like this, you know, where they're kind of floundering around. They're okay. In this case, Diaz was like, you know, there's nothing to say he couldn't have been a really good starter. So, you know, yeah, he was very overqualified to be a closer, and it shows.
Yeah, and it's amazing what he did in that short time. I mean, it's going to be difficult to find that guy, like I said, but, I mean, I think by this time next year, he's going to be up in the tier with those top three we just mentioned if he keeps it up. So it'll be fun to see what he does.
Right now, all three are going about the same spot, too. 72 to 79 in ADP is really not much at all. It's marginal.
Yeah,
that's the same.
Take your pick of these three, and I mean, give me Diaz for the strikeouts, like we mentioned. So,
I did want to ask you this, Doug, because all three, I mean, obviously the Cardinals have a plethora of options behind O, and then, you know, in Boston, you have Craig Kimbrel backed up by somebody like Thornburg, even though he hasn't been great. You have a guy like Joe Kelly, who has exhibited some pretty solid skills as well. But who do you think the guy would be behind Diaz, say they did decide to promote him to a starter, which I don't foresee happening, or he were to get injured or something? Do you think that Cishek would be back in time, or do you think that Nick Vincent could do it, or Tony Zitch maybe? Do you have somebody at the front of your, you know, depth chart that you think could actually hold on to that role for a little while and be good if Diaz were out?
No. I mean, the way that these things always work is Diaz is the guy until he's not, right? So if he had some rough patch or got hurt, is more likely, because even if he had a rough patch, they would stick with him, I
absolutely.
Think. But if he got hurt, you know, then they would say, okay, who have we been using in the eighth inning? That's the guy. And right now, I don't know who that is, because Cishek's not really, you know, back and ready to go yet. And you know, Zitch has had problems. You know, it's going to be right now it's going to be the healthy guy, you know. But yeah. I don't see anybody in Seattle taking his job. But let's be honest, I don't see anybody taking Kimbrel's job. And O is really going to have to stumble a lot, you know, to lose his job, too. So, I think these are pretty solid guys that we're talking about.
Agreed.
Not like guys down the list a ways.
I think, in my opinion, the next guy in Seattle is Dan Altavilla.
It could be.
Dude throws 100 miles an hour, no platoon split, gets ground balls. Obviously, with the velocity comes the strikeouts. I mean, he's really young, and obviously he's going to have to prove some more. He's only 24, but I think he's the guy for me. And if something with O falters, Matheny is really loyal to his guys, and O has proven to be, you know, he's earned a little bit longer rope. I do think if O falters, though, I think the next guy obviously is going to be Brett Cecil, because they're paying him a lot of money. And for Boston, I think it's going to have to be Thornburg. And he's intriguing. I was intrigued by him in Milwaukee, assuming he was going to keep that job. But obviously, they traded him. But he showed a lot of good flashes, too, with a nice ground ball rate, with a nice slider for Thornburg. So,
Brett Cecil.
Yeah, I think if I were – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's all good. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, for the for Boston, I'm not really – like, Thornburg did fine last year. I'm not sure he's going to be fine this year. And I think – I mean, if they let Joe Kelly just throw one inning at a time, he's going to be fantastic. So
absolutely.
He could pass Thornburg, I think. But, you know, it all takes time. It isn't like he's there yet. And you just see how these things play out. And sometimes it's just some guy who comes out of the blue, you know, and you just have to wait and see. But, you know, there's options. I tell you, St. Louis has so many guys in their bullpen they could use if they felt like it. But no, I just think these guys are so solid that it's going to take an injury, or else they're just going to stay in there.
One of the best tools to look at in season as well, that is an HQ tool, is the leverage index, because that's something that I just always am looking at throughout the season, because that tells you, you know, whether the manager really trusts certain guys in, you know, the highest leverage situations. And that's, in my opinion, the best way to kind of see who is behind the closer at every moment in time, which is, you know, probably the best thing to do for Seattle, at least as of right now. You know, see who's in the eighth inning, see who's in the seventh, who they're using for righty lefty splits. And, you know, again, looking at that leverage index number, because again, that's probably one of the most important tools I look at when looking at relievers, especially in season. So let's move on to the next group. I really don't know what to say about Wade Davis. I love Ken Giles and I love Kelvin Herrera, but I'm going to kick it off to you, Doug. Of these three, do you think that Davis is the obvious candidate to not draft right now? Or do you have a little bit more hesitation with guys like Giles or Herrera in the same spot?
Well, that's a good question. I really like Herrera. I mean, I like Herrera. I mean, I don't see any reason why he would have any risk associated with him, particularly. Wade Davis, I mean, his skills are crazy good when he's not hurt, and I just worry about that. I don't know if he's going to get hurt again or not. I hope not. I expect not, but you never know now. You know, now that he's been hurt, you know, it's something, you know, a cloud. Giles is fantastic too, though. Giles is really, really good. But he had a really bad spring in April last year, and that, you know, and that just kept Houston from using him right away. But then, you know, he pitched lights out from there and you know, got the job back. I don't see any reason to think that Giles or Herrera or Davis will do poorly other than, you know, these risks, like, you know, Davis getting hurt.
Giles is my favorite of the bunch, even though Herrera and Giles both have been guys that I've been targeting in drafts. If I miss out on the top tier, mainly Edwin Diaz, because I'm in love with that guy. If I miss out on Diaz, I usually kind of kick it towards Ken Giles and Kelvin Herrera. I have no problem going with them back-to-back in drafts at all, because I feel like you're getting two top-tier options for a little bit less price or a little bit of a discount. Ken Giles was, I mean, even though his walks went up to 4/9 in the second half, he still was an absolute mammoth in his strikeout to walk ratio. It was among the top six in all of baseball from June on last year, which it just goes to show you how great he is. And his ground ball rate ticked all the way up to almost 50% as well. I think Giles is as good as it gets. And again, I have no reservations about Kelvin Herrera. The Royals, while a lot of people are predicting them to be a mediocre team this year, I think they'll be in a lot of close ball games. And we've seen Herrera be a successful closer in years past as well. He's got a great arsenal. I think that both of them are in line to do great. Wade Davis, on the other hand, is there a case to be made that he might be a bargain if he continues to slip in drafts? Because like right now in NFBC, they have him at 87 overall, but his max pick is at 153, which means I think he's starting to slide a bit. I think people are getting more and more worried about the elbow itself. So, you know, Matt, I'll ask you, would you take Wade Davis, say if he went outside of the top 100, or are you still just kind of steering clear?
I probably would if he went outside of the top 100. You got to remember, it was kind of an interesting case with that Soler for Davis trade. Is the Royals let the Cubs do a full physical on Davis, and I don't think with the years of control kind of going both ways, I don't think they would have done the trade because they only had Davis for a year if it would have been something terrible. You know what I'm saying? If the results were that bad of MRI or anything, I don't think they would have done it with only having him for a year.
Sure.
Compared to Soler, like 5 years. But so, no, if he slipped down far enough, I mean, I do prefer Herrera and Giles. I'm with you. If I don't get Diaz, or even I'm jumping with Herrera and Giles, but I'm staying away from Davis. But if he did slip far enough, I wouldn't hesitate. I mean, the Cubs are going to win a lot of games this year, should have a lot of opportunities. I am a little bit worried with they seem to be grooming CJ Edwards for that role, or Carl Edwards, whatever he's going by now. And obviously Rondon is still around.
Koji Uehara
is still there. You're right. And so I mean, I'm a little bit worried about that because I think if Davis falters, he's going to have a shorter leash because there's options. In Kansas City, there's options in all these bullpens, but I think the Cubs, Joe Maddon, though, had Wade Davis before in Tampa, so he might have some sort of loyalty, have a little bit more loyalty than normal in a situation like that. But if Davis slips far enough, I'm fine with it. I'm a little worried about the velocity decrease. I haven't seen any spring training numbers on him, or velocity readings, more importantly, so I have nothing to judge that off of. But if he does slip far enough, I would go Davis, but again, be conscious and maybe get the handcuff later, but you just got to guess which one, I guess.
Do you have a favorite of this group?
For me, I'll take Giles, man. He's been the guy I've been getting all day. One bad, he's kind of a good example of how fickle relievers are. He had that really bad April, and everyone kind of thinks he had a bad year, but he didn't at all. And I'm like you touched on, the walks picked up a little bit, but if I had to rank this group, I'm going Giles, Herrera, and then Wade Davis.
Yeah, the thing about relievers is that, yeah, if they have like three or four bad outings, then that really derails their numbers for the whole season. But once you take into account that for a fantasy team, if you just have one or two bad outings from a reliever in a month or two, it's really not going to be that big of a deal in terms of your ratios long term. So I will say this, that you know, behind Herrera, you have, you know, Soria and a plethora of other options. And then especially in Houston, they have a ton of guys. I mean, Gregerson started off with the role last year. Will Harris showed that he could, you know, do a pretty solid job in the ninth inning role as well. They have Michael Feliz down there. I know they have Francis Martez, if they ever bring him up, if they wanted to put him in the bullpen. So, I mean, all three of these closers have a lot of options behind them. And that's something that you can maybe capitalize on in deeper formats, grab some of those Lima targets, guys that can help your ratios. And if something, maybe you strike gold and get some luck if one of those guys in front end up, you know, getting injured or whatever. But let's move on to the next group. So Juris Familia, David Robertson, and AJ Ramos. Matt, I'll kick it to you to start off with. And I do want to highlight Juris Familia because we don't really have a clear timetable on his suspension. And a lot of people are kind of gravitating towards grabbing Addison Reed later on, which I don't mind because he's a decent reliever in his own right. So I have no issues with people grabbing Reed and, you know, getting a secure amount of saves to begin the season. But do you think that Familia is going at a pretty reasonable cost, especially since he was a top tier guy in years past? And, you know, right now he's about pick 113 at the moment. Are you okay with grabbing Familia where he's currently going, or are you not comfortable with that?
I'll stay away from him. There's too much uncertainty with, I think it's pretty much going to be it's a sure thing he's suspended, right? Or did they not say that he was? I haven't heard anything. I think I'm always just assuming he is, which if he is, I mean, you got to bake that into the price, and I don't think that's a big enough downgrade for how tightly knit these close grouping of closers is. Although I suppose if he wasn't going to get suspended, he'd probably be in the tier above this one with the Giles and Herrera and Davis and them, maybe if not higher. But, I mean, I like Familia. It's kind of the perfect storm there with the really good pitching staff and kind of a middle-of-the-road offense. So you think he's going to get maybe a couple more opportunities than others. But that's really hard to speculate on. But, yeah, I guess he's going pretty fair. I would take Familia before I would take Wade Davis, though. I'll say that.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's really hard to gauge. I mean, you don't know how long you're going to assume a month. And Chapman, how many saves did Chapman miss out on in a month? You know what I'm saying? It's really hard to gauge on what you're dealing with.
Probably like 6 to 8 in your projections is what you would kind of throw out of there.
That sounds right. Yeah, I agree with that. That sounds right.
While we have you here, what do you think about David Robertson and AJ Ramos? Ramos has some skills that are a problem, and he has a few options behind him that people are really gravitating towards. And then you have David Robertson, who we don't know what his role, not with the White Sox, but with another team, which is inevitable, is going to be once he ends up getting there. So what do you think about those two?
You touched on that, man. Ramos has kind of scared me with that walk rate that spiked. It's over one. He added 1.6 walks to his already walk rate, which wasn't great to begin with. He averaged 6 walks per 9 in 2014, and now he's back up to approaching 5. He had some, I believe there was some bouts with some sort of injury last year. I could be wrong. I'm sorry if I am, but I'm staying away from Ramos. They added Ziegler. They have Bearclaw there. The Marlins kind of seem to be making up for their deficiencies in the rotation by stacking up their bullpen with Tozawa and all them guys. I think that's kind of the route they're going to take. It's going to be interesting to see how that works for them. They're definitely going the cheaper route to show up that pitching staff for sure. Robertson is tough, man. If I knew he was going to be a closer all year, I would take him. But you have to think a trade's coming, and there's a really good chance that when he does get traded, he won't be the closer. Because remember, in New York, he was an elite setup man for a long time before he got the chance, and then he did very well in the job. He was still pretty solid last year for a bad team, gave up a couple homers, but his bad outings were really bad. He was either really good or bad. There was no in between. Yeah, I think he led the closers in like blow up outings where he had like 4 runs or more, which happened to him like 3 or 4 different times. But this is a scary tier for me. If I have to pick one from this tier, it's Familia, and I'm not that confident in that. Like I said earlier, so.
Well, I mean, in fairness, Robertson had 2 months where he got blasted, and then the rest of the year was fine. You know, he had a 0.87 ERA in April, 1.95, or I'm sorry, 2.7 in June, 2.38 in August, 1.17 in September. So, I mean, it really, again, was just a few bad outings at the beginning of the season that really kind of hurt him, not in the beginning, but also in July, that really hurt him and really hurt his outlook in terms of fantasy owners for this year as well. Doug, what's your thoughts on this group in general? I mean, you can hit on all 3 of these guys. Are you targeting any of them? How much does the Familia looming suspension worry you? I mean, what's your thoughts on these 3 guys?
Well, I would go for Familia for sure out of this group, and I would try to probably handcuff him to Addison Reed. I mean, Addison Reed's very good. If Familia gets suspended, which we don't know right now, then Reed would, you know, get to close until Familia got back, and, you know, then you could dump Reed. But I think Familia is an elite closer when he's not suspended, and there'd be no reason not to take the discount that you're getting there and then get Reed way later. I would do that. I mean, I think that's a good play. That's as good a play as any I can think of. Ramos is just skills challenged. He's not as good as these other guys we've been talking about. And there are guys behind him who can do the job. So Ramos is a guy I would probably not want to get at this price. I would want him a lot cheaper than he's going. I don't know why he's going so high, to be honest. Robertson, if Robertson can close, he's solid. But, you know, there's just equal a chance that he could get traded to somebody like the Dodgers, and then he's just done. You know, he won't be closing anymore. So that would worry me. That kind of trade would happen in July. You know, you'd miss like a half a season of closer. So if that happened. So I would definitely go for Familia out of the three for the reasons I said. But I would want to try to handcuff him to Reed if I could.
Absolutely. And the most expensive Reed will be is around a top 200 pick, which is actually in front of Nate Jones, who, you know, Nate Jones, while he is great, I mean, his skills are great. He's an awesome reliever. He doesn't have the job, at least right now. And he's not guaranteed to have the job if and when Robertson leaves. So I think as much as I love Jones, he's actually being priced a little bit too high for what he might give you in terms of raw saves. I mean, his ratios will be great no matter what. So you're paying for that, and I get it. But, you know, Reed's max pick is 191, or min pick is 191, and Nate Jones is at 165, and I just don't agree with that. I think that's the best play, going with Familia and going with Reed. No matter what, you have the Mets closer, and usually the Mets are fairly competitive. I think they're going to be competitive again this season, and that always lends to more save chances. As far as Miami goes, I'm completely out on Ramos, and even Bearclaw is getting a little bit too expensive for me. I mean, everybody is starting to come on board that trend, and while I think he has a lot of skills, I can't count on him being the guy that's going to get saves for them. They also have Brad Ziegler down there, who, if anybody, he has the most experience.
That's who I think
is
going to get it.
Yeah, so I actually like Ziegler of that. If we're going to go with one Miami guy, I would go with Ziegler because he's just so cheap. He's outside of the top 400, and he's also somebody that's been there before. The skills aren't amazing. You're not going to get, you know, the next Ken Giles out of it, but he is going to be solid in that role if it were to go to him. And I just feel like the signing there shows me that Miami is kind of done with Ramos being inconsistent. Like, he's going to start off with the role, but I think at the first sign of him, you know, weathering or being terrible, they're going to end up, you know, taking him out of that role and putting Ziegler in. But I absolutely agree. I think the best play is to go with Familia and Reed here. All right, let's go on to a very interesting bullpen mix here that I think a lot of fantasy owners are, you know, it's kind of weird how fantasy owners are drafting out of the Phillies bullpen this year, because obviously Hector Neris, while he is the lead dog in terms of skills from this group, and he's being drafted the highest among the relievers here, he doesn't have the role, at least as of right now. And Gianmar Gomez, who, you know, racked up a ton of saves last year, is still being drafted outside of the top 300. So, Doug, are you drafting anybody from the Phillies bullpen? I think it's obvious that Neris is the best skilled guy there, but is there anybody in particular outside of Neris that you'd be targeting? Or, I mean, are you okay with Gianmar Gomez? Would you actually take him for a team? What are your thoughts on this core?
My thoughts are I stay away from the whole pile of junk right there. I had Hector Neris all last year in labor and was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And you know, Neris never got the role. So I was, you know, I just think that once bitten, twice shy on that. I don't think Gomez is any good at all. I mean, I don't know how in the world he held on to it last year. I don't think he'll hold on to it nearly as long this year. But, you know, who's going to be pitching well at the time that he blows up is the question. And they've added, you know, Joaquin Benoit, and they've added Pat Nashik. And I actually like Ed Bray Ramos. I think he's pretty good. He's as good as Neris. So I don't think that Neris is the sure thing if and when Gomez blows up that people think he is. And so, you know, what are you going to do, roster all five of those guys? I mean, there's no way. So I don't know why. You know, I can't pick a Philly right now. I would stay away from it for the moment.
I haven't ended up with one Philly in any of my drafts. I didn't last year either. I think I had one or two shares of Neris, but that ended up coming later on in the season in the leagues I was doing. But, you know, Gomez had, what, 35, 37 saves last year, and I still have no idea how that happened. I honestly am at a loss for words with Gomez, so I don't know how that worked out. Matt, what are your thoughts on the Phillies bullpen at this moment in time?
How do you not like Gomez's 4.85 ERA and 1.46 WHIP? I mean, come on.
Well, he got crushed in September.
Yeah, it was a lot better before then, to be fair. Yeah, but no, I think obviously I'm staying away from this bullpen, but
Neris and Edubel Ramos are the two guys with the most skill, clearly. But the Phillies are kind of, you know, obviously they're not going forward this year. They're still, maybe next year at this time they will be, but they're still kind of in that rebuild mode when they're trying to see what they have. And Ramos and Neris are a good start to a good bullpen. And I know Neris is 27, so this might not apply to him, but I think Ramos is actually probably the best guy here, like Doug said. But there's no incentive for the Phillies to give him the job outside of maybe the last month of the season, because you can keep his costs down. Go with Gomez, go with Joaquin Benoit, I think he's going to get the trap for him. I even think Pat Neshek gets a shot before these two guys, Neris or Ramos, just because of that. Phillies are, you know, got to watch arbitration prices and all that good stuff. They did the same thing with Ken Giles. So I got to watch something like that. Klentak came from that school of, you know, the Houston and watching, you know, keeping prices down for the relievers and stuff. So it's a minor thing to think about, but I'm staying away from the whole bullpen.
On a side note, Pat Neshek during the WBC, more specifically the last round against the Dominican Republic and his, you know, two or three out stint was like one of the most entertaining things I've ever watched ever. It was awesome. So if you like watching baseball, Pat Neshek is like one of the, he just has all these little quirks about him that just are insane. It's insanely fun to watch. All right, let's move on to the White Sox bullpen. We already kind of touched on this when we talked about David Robertson. So I'll kick it to you, Matt. Obviously, the White Sox have Nate Jones behind Robertson. A, are you buying Jones? And then B, are you, if you're not buying Jones, are you gravitating towards another arm in this White Sox bullpen? I know a lot of people are talking about Carson Fulmer possibly coming up and being a relief option for them. Me personally, I love Zach Birdie. Wow. I think Zach Birdie could be a legit relief arm that fantasy owners can use maybe in the second half this year. But what are your thoughts on the White Sox pen this year?
I'm kind of also staying away from it. If I am going to roster somebody, though, it's going to be Jones. Because I think with his strikeouts and like you touched on already, the ratio, he's going to have value in most formats anyways, keeping your ratios down. Fulmer as a relief option for me, not this year, man. He still walks too many guys. He's still in the rotation right now in AAA. But he hasn't shown me anything with commanding pitches at the major league level. He walks too many guys to be a reliable 8-inning option. Dan Jennings, Zach Putnam, Tommy Connolly, none of those guys are anything great. Zach Birdie is a good guy for me. I think he's a closer potentially. But they already signed Nate Jones to a really, really cheap contract for, I believe he's got 3-4, even maybe even 5 more years on it. It's crazy. And I think with that cost certainty in play, I think he's going to be the closer for them long term. But for this year, I'm staying away from this bullpen, because last thing you want is, you know, you're doing your upper third in your league in saves, and then they trade Robertson, and then you don't have Jones. If you draft Robertson, you have to draft Jones, kind of like what Doug said with the Familia and Addison Reed thing. But if you're not going to draft both, then don't draft one of them.
If I'm not mistaken, does he have arbitration years left, Nate Jones? It's not an actual contract, right?
No, they signed him to a really cheap extension a couple years back.
Oh, it's a team option. Okay, yeah, it is. It's just a team option. It's a mutual option. That makes a little more sense for him to be the long-term closer. Okay, so I thought that maybe it would not be the best, you know, the most cost-efficient way for the White Sox to handle their team this year based on the fact that they would be, you know, obviously sellers and, you know, not be willing to, you know, have guys, you know, rack up any type of meaningful price or anything like that, since they're wanting to compete in the future.
His price is fixed, so yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that kind of changes my tune on him a little bit. Doug, do you hate the White Sox bullpen as much as Matt does?
No, I don't hate it, but I really do think there's no doubt that Robertson's going to get traded at the trade deadline or just before the trade deadline. And, you know, when that happens, I don't know how it could be anybody but Nate Jones. So basically, you're trying to buy a half a closer there. He has elite skills. I think he'll be fine if he stays healthy, of course. He has had health problems in the past, but he was healthy last year. He's very, very good, as good as some of these other, you know, kind of elite guys we've been talking about. So I wouldn't be afraid to get Nate Jones. I don't really see anybody else on the horizon. Zach Birdie has a huge strikeout rate, but he walks too many guys. He has some growth to go. Of course, he would be almost free at this point. But I do think Jones would be the guy. But just, you know, you're buying a half a year. You're not buying a whole year.
Yeah, I think Nate Jones is obviously the best buy of this group, and you know, I haven't really ended up with him in a ton of spots just because he's kind of growing in price as we move on through the spring here, because people are just in love with him, and it's warranted because he's an electric, you know, reliever. I think that he's one of the better guys out there, but at the same time, it's just really hard when, you know, his draft cost just keeps on becoming more and more steep as time goes on. But it'll be interesting to watch how it plays out. Now, the Rockies bullpen, this is going to be even more interesting. I believe when Greg Holland got signed, the first thing I said was, don't worry about this for Ottavino owners, because I didn't really believe that anything Holland does from now to when the season starts is going to matter in terms of Ottavino's role. But we're seeing Holland kind of gain some steam in terms of his velocity. He's, in my opinion, the obvious candidate to take over for Ottavino if and when he falters. But, Doug, what's your opinion on this? Because I know you look into bullpens heavily, and obviously Craig Holland is one of the better relievers out there, but we don't know what he's going to be coming back from, you know, obviously Tommy John surgery and such. Do you think that if he can get his velocity back up to 95, 96, that he legitimately can take Ottavino's job?
Yeah, unfortunately, because I have multiple shares of Ottavino already.
So do I.
But yeah, I mean, I think... I love Ottavino. I think he's one of the best pitchers in the National League, and there's no way he should lose his job, but it seems to be happening as we speak. I just keep reading about how Holland is pitching lights out and how much Bud Black loves him and thinks he should be the closer. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Holland's the opening day closer and not even have to wait, which is a bit disappointing. I mean, Ottavino's done nothing wrong. He's pitching great, you know, all the time. But that's just how it goes. I think you see that in the ADPs. I mean, Ottavino had a really high, he's going pretty high, and it's just kind of slipping for him, and Holland just keeps moving up and up. So I think the buyers are seeing that too.
Yeah, he's had a min pick go all the way up to 151, which if you asked this a month ago, he probably was in the min pick range of like 250, somewhere in that region. So obviously he is gaining a ton of steam. And me personally, I'm still an Ottavino guy. I always will be. The slider is deadly. I think that he has the stuff to be a ninth inning guy. The ground ball rate's legit. You know, each of the last 2 years that he's pitched, even though it was only a 10 inning sample last year, he had over a 60% ground ball rate. He did that again last season. I just love Ottavino, and I can't really stop liking him. But, you know, Matt, I'll kick it to you here. Do you think Greg Holland can legitimately take over this role, and are you drafting him?
First of all, are you watching the WBC? Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Watch the slide by Baez. I think he was safe here. I think they missed the call. But anyways, the thing with Holland is I was with you, Mike, when they first signed him. I was like, oh, cool. Nice setup guy for I think he was safe. No, I think they signed him for a nice setup guy for Ottavino. But I was digging into a little bit of the contract for Holland. He can get up to $35 million for 2 years with incentives in that deal. Meaning, I think they have fully intend on him being the closer. And that's kind of scary for me because I think Ottavino is a stud. I'm with Doug there. I like Ottavino. But, I mean, you look at the – I don't want to get down too much into the contract, but that's a lot of money. He can – for games finished, he can get up to $2 million each in incentives this year for 30, 40, and 50 games. Like, it's – doesn't look good, man, because they got Ottavino locked into, you know, a contract with like Jones at a set price. So I don't know. So it shouldn't matter. But the thing with Holland, it scares me. And it would be another kind of weird thing that Colorado did this offseason, I guess. But it looks like to me, honestly, with the reports I've read with Holland today, he's sitting 92, 93 with a nice curveball set in the inning of spring training today. And that contract, I think he's the closer. And I think that's wrong because I think Ottavino's the better player. But that's unfortunate.
Well, the incentives are based on games and games finished. You know, so I don't necessarily think that means that he's going to get
well,
the
you
saves.
You can't do saves in contract. It has to be games finished. You can't use the term saves. So
yeah, and Ottavino is an automatic $7 million next year. I mean, so they already have him locked up, Ottavino, at least for now. I think, you know, it's honestly the problem here is that it's anybody's guess now. When, as opposed to a couple months ago, I said Holland has no shot. Now I'm legitimately worried there's a shot. I think everybody, you know, on the call right now is legitimately worried that Holland has a shot. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but don't you think that Colorado is making a case to be sneaky competitive this year, like not to the point where they're going to compete for maybe a playoff spot, but I mean, they had a run last year where they were close to the wild card race. I think they could maybe step it up a little bit. And, you know, again, obviously the more that you win, the more save chances that you get. And, you know, we could be seeing a guy that could be a top 10 reliever of this group in terms of fantasy and saves and such. It's just really hard right now to, you know, guess which one it would be. So, you know, for me, I'm still going to buy Ottavino because I think that his price, like you said, Duck, is going to slide more. You know, right now it's at 169 in NFBC. I can see that sliding even more. And I would rather buy him because I feel like he has established his role and he's further away from Tommy John. Greg Holland, while he's been getting better, I think there's still a ton of risk here. So I'm still going with Ottavino, but it's awfully close and it definitely is unsettling.
Yeah. By the way, they did overturn that. They called by a safe. How unreal was that?
It's hard for me to host this and watch it at the same time. Yeah. I just catch glimpses.
Quickest hands of anyone I've ever seen. It's nuts.
So the next bullpen we'll talk about is kind of crazy here. I don't know if you guys saw this, but at least what I read, Kota Glover looks like he is going to be the Nationals reliever of choice, at least to start the season. And I'm really interested what you think about this, Doug, because I know from a couple things I've read of yours that you are interested in Kota Glover. Would you like for him to remain the closer for the full season if he could do it? Or is there another option in the Nats bullpen that you would rather go with?
Well, I don't really know what Sean Kelly's doing so wrong. I don't understand it. I mean, the guy was completely fantastic last year, and you know, his skills across the board are very, very good. He does sometimes give up too many home runs and has a high fly ball ratio. So there's one thing. But you know, so do a lot of guys. So does Glover, for that matter. I don't really get it, but. I read today, I mean, you know, and let me tell you, I live in Cincinnati. I know Dusty Baker really well. Dusty Baker said today that nobody's ruled out yet. And I'm like, okay. How can nobody be ruled out yet? Like, that's ridiculous, right?
He wants to give that job to Joe Nathan, I think. That's what he wants.
I mean, he just I don't think that's the case, but I think
no, I'm just messing it up.
I think Dusty Baker goes out there and says, okay, Sean Kelly throw. And then Sean Kelly throws. He goes, well, that's pretty good. That guy could be my closer. And then the next day, Kota Glover throws and goes, well, that guy's pretty good. He could be my closer. And he doesn't know what to do. I really think so. I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't think Dusty Baker knows what's going to happen.
So if you had to buy one, who would it be?
Oh, I'd buy the cheap guy always. Which right now it's Glover. I mean, Glover's, you know, actually, you know, when you look at his min ADP, it's way, way up. What, 198 now? So somebody's, you know, somebody's drinking the Kool-Aid there. I think it's a little premature on Glover, but every pundit writer in Washington and Dusty and everybody else is just talking about how incredible this guy is. And I have yet, you know, he's good. Let's tap the brakes a little, though. He's not like the greatest pitcher that ever lived.
You have any love for Blake Treinen or Treinen?
No, I do. I mean, he's okay. I mean, he's okay.
Yeah,
go ahead. You tell me why you love him so much.
I just watch the pitch and the stuff's nasty. But I mean, they're all good. You can't go wrong with any of these options, in my opinion. And I'm with you. I don't know what Sean Kelly has to do, because there's nothing that's jumped off the page and says, oh, he can't be. There's no way he can be the closer. I mean, the stuff is nasty. The platoon splits that he kind of did traditionally have kind of reverted back in his favor this year. It wasn't so bad against lefties. And I mean, it's kind of weird because they dealt with Papelbon struggling for so long and kind of let him kind of remove himself from the closer role. And now they have a good reliever staring him in the face and they won't make him the closer. So it's kind of weird.
I think Sean Kelly is completely fine. I have no problem drafting him anywhere. And I think Kota Glover is the obvious option to back him up. And if Kota Glover ends up being the guy that starts the year getting the save opportunities, then so be it. And I don't mind if people are starting to draft him higher and higher because, you know, I think that there's obviously a reason to do so and it's warranted. But at the same time, I think that these are really strong options. I think Kelly might be the best buy of the group because he's still going outside the top 200. He has an elite swinging strike rate. He's able to strike everybody out. I mean, his strikeouts per nine have been 12 or 11 or better in each of the last four seasons. I agree. I don't see the reason to want to take him out of the role. He should be the front runner. Maybe it's the velocity. Maybe that's what's kind of you know, making Dusty a little bit weary.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's the home runs too, but, you know, all relievers in some way, shape, or form give up home runs. You know, if I'm betting on it right now, I'd say it's Sean Kelly, and then behind him is Kota Glover. I don't think that's news to anybody, but we'll have to see how it shakes out. If I had to make a bet on it today, I think it's going to be Kelly.
If you're drafting Kelly, you also got to draft Glover too, right? Automatic, right?
I agree. I think so, because yeah. And same thing with Familia and Reed. You know, even if you have to go up a round or two higher than you think you should just to nab one of those guys, it's more meaningful to make sure that your team gets that guy as opposed to somebody else, because somebody else can try and trade them to you and, you know, pretty much take advantage of the situation. So you just grabbing that guy earlier in drafts and not paying the fab or not paying the price that would take in trade to acquire the person, I think is the better move rather than, you know, letting them fall and then having to do that.
I mean, with it being the Nationals, you're looking at 40 saves or potentially if you can get the right guy. So, I mean, I think you got to grab both of them because the Nationals, obviously on paper, are one of the top three teams in the National League. So you got to get on that.
Yeah.
One thing about the Nationals that you got to watch out for is if they trade for a guy. So if they traded Robinson, for Robertson, that would blow up that strategy. So that's
very
one
point.
Thing
very good point.
That I would worry about.
And he's been, you know, connected to the Nationals for a while now. I think everybody's just kind of assuming that that's his likely destination. But at the same time, I wouldn't be so sure about it because the Nationals, like, I don't know what they legitimately want to give up. They have some warts in their starting rotation. They have some guys in the minors that they need to use for this season. I don't know. I might go on a long tangent about that, but I think in general, it's not a guarantee.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm just saying that that's something to consider in Washington that you wouldn't consider, say, with the Mets.
Sure, yeah.
I was baffled Robertson wasn't in the Adam Eaton trade with what they gave up, to be honest. I thought he would have just fit comfortably in that trade. So maybe, I mean, are they still pursuing him? Did they rule him out as a candidate? I mean, who knows? Maybe they're not interested in Robertson.
I've read different things, but I will say who was it? Wish I could. I'd love to give attribution. So let's say somebody wrote a really good piece on the fact that Washington has to watch how much they're spending because they're up against the tax. And so they had to, like, that's part of why they cut Norris because they had to save money. Yeah, and man. So if they're saving money, then they got to watch, you know, like who they're taking on. They can't
got to keep that on. Bryce Harper fund strong.
Yeah, whatever. I can't wait to see that how that goes. But yeah, I mean, it's actually a concern of Washington's that they have to watch their money.
Yeah, I don't know what Washington's doing. Actually, a couple months ago when we were doing the catcher preview, we had Ryan Bloomfield on to talk about Derek Norris, and I find it kind of funny that we're having this Nationals debate when just like a couple months ago we were having the same type of debate just on a different position with the Nationals. So it's kind of funny how that works out, but. This bullpen core, I have one person that I care for or that I like, and then the rest of them are just kind of blah options to me, but that's the Angels. Is it Camper Bedrosian and nobody? How about you, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Bedrosian and nobody, and Bedrosian's a guy I've been getting in a lot of drafts. I read something weird about Houston Street. It was evidently his father passed away or something last offseason. So instead of working out like he normally did, before last year, all he did was he ran the family business. So he didn't work out, and he came back and kept getting hurt all the time now. So I don't know if there's anything to that or whatever. I thought that was kind of an interesting story. But for me, it's Bedrosian. For some reason, Andrew Bailey's in the conversation. He had, a good half season in 2012, and he's still living off that, which is crazy to me. But Cam Bedrosian is definitely the guy. I like the skills. He walks a little bit too much, but nothing too egregious isn't to get him out of the job. But the stuff is nasty. Mike, I know you've long loved Cam Bedrosian, and you were a guy in on him a lot. I picked him up in our 20-team dynasty this year in the draft here, hoping I can steal a cheap 25 save. So Bedrosian for me, and it's no other name in this conversation.
No lie, I've been talking about Bedrosian since 2014. I just it never works
See?
Out. I feel like it just never works out.
And I think honestly, now's your year, and you're not going to own him anywhere now.
That's probably going to be the case because I haven't ended up with Bedrosian anywhere. Part of it is just because the Angels are so in flux all the time. But how about you, Doug? Are you targeting Bedrosian or any of these other options? Is Houston Street completely dead to you? Because, you know, while he does have injury issues all the time and we can't rely on him, he is somebody that in the past has just been a flat-out steady reliever whenever he is on the field. So the fact that he's, like, going at an absolutely egregious draft price right now, do you have any interest there, or are you just kind of throwing in the towel there?
Yeah, put a fork in Houston Street. I have no interest at all. Andrew Bailey's a guy that Philadelphia threw away last year, if you remember. I don't know why in the world anyone would draft him. The guys behind him, J.C. Ramirez, the Reds threw him away. I mean, these are
all
rejects.
Let's tell you something.
Except
the Reds bullpen was historically bad last year.
Yes, historically bad, and still threw away J.C. Ramirez, who's now a stalwart for the Angels. it's Bedrosian or nothing, and I'll tell you what, if Bedrosian gets hurt, I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't. I mean, if he gets hurt, and you know, he does get hurt sometimes,
and they,
it's you know, bad. I mean, it's really bad.
The Angels are up against
like Bud Norris or something. I don't know.
Yeah, right? No, the Angels are up against the luxury tax, too, so they're kind of got to – that's why they only added, like, Ben Revere this offseason and made a couple trades and stuff instead of free agent signings. With that, and they have absolutely no farm system outside of Jamai Jones and Matt Theis, who I don't think you've given up either one of those two for a reliever. So they're kind of stuck in – they kind of have to deal with what they have. So
it'll be Mike Trout into relief or something.
Yeah. He might be the best choice.
Poor Jock Thompson at HQ has to deal with the Angels, and I can't imagine a more frustrating situation than having the best player on the planet and possibly of this century on your team and not being able to surround him with enough talent to be competitive. Like, I can't imagine a more frustrating situation. Oh, wait, I'm a Rays fan, so I can't imagine a more frustrating situation.
Hey, the Rays are magicians, man. They've turned, like, four different closers the last 5 years into 30 save guys, so you do pretty well in the bullpen.
Oh, and we just got Jumbo Diaz, so how do you feel about that, Doug? A little Jumbo Diaz to the Rays action?
I would love to have Jumbo Diaz in a brawl, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he's a hoss. He was pitching for the Dominican the other day, actually. And yeah, his name definitely warrants that because he's just massive. But yeah, I'm a Bedrosian guy. I am not, you know, grabbing any of these other relievers behind him. I don't feel like there's a reason to. I will say Andrew Bailey had a nice month. Maybe that's why they took a chance on him. You know, he had a nice month of September, so maybe that was the Angels, you know, thing. I don't really know, but maybe every year there are guys that just come up out of nowhere that people can use. Maybe that will be something that happens for the Angels, because while I do love Bedrosian, he does get injured. He does not have a good health score. He's somebody that just is not consistent in any way, shape, or form. And I mean, something with the Angels, too, is like they never wanted to rely on Bedrosian wholeheartedly. They always have had other options that they've went with in front of him. And it kind of reminds me of back in the day with like Mike Napoli before they gave him a chance. They always had other options at catcher before Socha let Napoli finally hit. And then he had a great season. He, you know, and it's kind of all she wrote. He ended up going to other teams, et cetera.
So Houston Street is modern day Jeff Mathis, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, kind of. That's a very good way to put it. All right, the last bullpen we'll talk about here is possibly not the worst.
The worst one?
We just talked about the Angels, so I don't think it's actually the worst. But the Twins bullpen, as of right now, according to ADP, it looks to me like Brandon Kinsler is the top guy here, and it looks like he might start the season with the closer role. Doug, I'll kick it to you. Any interest in Brandon Kinsler? On another kind of topic here, do you think that there's any hope for Glenn Perkins to regain his closer role if he gets healthy again? Do you think that Kinsler is more of a guy in wait or a guy that's holding down the fort until Perkins is healthy, or do you think that Kinsler could legitimately take the role all year?
Well, let me start with Perkins. Perkins, I read about him today, and there's absolutely no timetable, no goals. He's just kind of going through his rehab and has no idea when or if his velocity will return. And if it does, when that might happen.
He's Sean Doolittle.
I just don't think the Twins can count on him at all. So Kinsler's the guy because he was the guy last year. But now this is a guy who doesn't even, you know, he doesn't even break a pane of glass. I mean, I don't know what, you know, his ground ball rate is really the thing to recommend him. Other than that, I don't think Kinsler's any good at all. But let's say Kinsler completely fails. Who do you turn to? I don't know. I mean, it's who, you know, who's not completely horrible at the time. That's the guy. And I don't know who that is. I mean, it could be Presley. It could be
May.
Tonkin. You know, but I mean, we're just throwing darts, you know, with a blindfold on. I don't know. I think that this bullpen is just one of those, you know, nuclear fallout places that you just stay away from.
Trevor May. You mentioned May. May has Tommy John, needs Tommy John there, Mike.
Oh, does he? I didn't even look at that. Yep. Yeah, I have it
this
earlier.
Week.
Oh,
this
my
week.
Gosh. That's terrible. That's brutal. And obviously, it was from them probably putting him in the rotation, or at least attempting to put him in the rotation. But that would have been
yo-yo,
the best option.
The yo-yo effect on May going back and forth. Yeah, right?
Yeah, so at least for right now, Matt, I don't know if you want to add anything here, but I think we can all agree there's just really no options. I have, full disclosure, in multiple leagues that I've done, especially the deeper ones, I've thrown either a buck or a reserve round, dart throw on Perkins, just because there's no way Brandon Kitzler. I mean, I guess
holy
Brandon
cow.
Kitzler could be okay for the season. We have seen somebody like GMR Gomez end up going a full year and get 35 plus saves, but I don't believe in Kinsler at all.
Watch this relay throw from Javi Baez and the tag by Molina at this play at the plate. It's ridiculous.
I hope Doug is watching it too, because he probably has no idea what you're talking about.
Sorry, guys. This is an amazing play. The thing with Minnesota is, you nailed it though. There's nobody on the major league roster besides Kinsler. Kinsler, what Kinsler does is he's got a relative level of safety because he commands that sinker so well, but he has no command of his secondary pitches, and they're not even that great. So it's one pitch. It's kind of like Zach Britton, but not because he's not that good. But that's the game plan he brings with the ground balls and the one pitch. But the thing with Minnesota is a lot of their future close. They have so many guys that in their bullpen in the minor leagues that could be future closers, and I don't want to spend an hour speculating or even a minute speculating on future closers in the minor leagues, because that's a fool's gold for fantasy. But I mean, there's a lot of guys down there. The early front runner for me is Tyler Jay, who the guy they just switched him to the bullpen full time. So I think that's ultimately his job. But they have other options, a bunch of right handers that throw hard, because they kind of Nick Birdie, Zach Birdie's brother, is in this conversation. They had an organizational philosophy where they tried to add velocity because they're known for pitchers that threw 90 and couldn't break a pane of glass. So they tried to draft a bunch of college relievers that threw hard. So they have a bunch of those in the bullpen, but it's a situation to avoid. But if you have to invest in one long-term, it's Tyler Jay, and don't invest in long-term closers. So don't do that.
Yeah. So now I'm very, very sad that we just mentioned. Why do we have to, full disclosure, I did not make this list. As usual, Justin is the one that made this, but sorry, we had to end on such a sad, sad note. But
I want to ask a question real quick, then, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing with Andrew Miller this year? How are you valuing his role?
Stock?
Obviously, because his fantasy stock, because it's really hard to gauge because he's a reliever, but he's not going to get you that number one category that you draft relievers for. But he's going to help you everywhere else. So what are you doing with Andrew Miller? Where do you feel comfortable taking him,
Doug?
I find it very easy to pass on Andrew Miller because he goes so high.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrew Miller's, he's great. He's a great pitcher, great reliever, but he goes way too high for not being a closer, unless you're doing something like score sheet, and then you'd love to have him. But I don't see any reason to even lose one wink of sleep over passing on him at the price he commands.
Yeah, there's guys like Grant Dayton last year that just kind of come up. And you can grab them and for nothing and essentially have, Chris Davinsky. There's multiple options that always kind of crop up out of nowhere that can give you strikeout numbers and could also give you good ratios. And while I think Miller is in a tier of his own in terms of, middle relievers that hold down your ratios and help you out, just paying a top 115 pick for him is not economically great, in my opinion. I do think he's going to be valuable. I mean, I don't foresee any reason he wouldn't be. And I think that he'll end up with maybe a third of the save chances in Cleveland, which is certainly valuable in itself as well. But, I still would take Ottavino, who's going, 60 plus picks behind him or 50 plus picks behind him. I think Dellin Betances is the same type of guy, and he's going, about 70 picks behind him. There's just a lot of options that are in the middle reliever core there that you can still go with that are much cheaper and should offer not the same ratios, because let's face it, Miller is an absolute beast. But I also think that there is, a case to be made here that he's had a ton of workload here over the last calendar year. I mean, not only did he pitch a full season, but on top of that, he had a full playoff run, including to all the way to game 7 of the World Series. Now he's pitching in the World Baseball Classic. I think that there's something to be said. I mean, mind you, some guys overcome that, like Madison Bumgarner did, a couple years ago. And obviously, this is something that shouldn't be a worry to you, but it is something that I kind of put in the back of my mind when looking at somebody like Miller. I'll say 100% that I haven't looked at
at him at all based on his draft costs in any of the auctions I've done or just regular snake drafts, just because it's just a bit too high for me. So, all right, let's wrap this up. Doug, once again, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Again, give everybody kind of some plugs on what you're up to nowadays and where you can be reached and such.
Yeah, come find me on baseballhq.com. It's a subscription site. We probably have 30 good writers that talk about every different bit of fantasy baseball. On Twitter, I'm at DougDynas41.
Thank you, thank you. Matt, where can you be reached and such?
MDTempFWFB. Again, I'm going to be updating the prospect list throughout the year. Listen to the prospect pod with me and Mike on Wednesdays. And our buddy Andy. Justin, hurry back soon. We miss you, buddy. And RIP, maybe. And yeah, Doug, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, hopefully Justin doesn't come back too soon. I've really enjoyed this time off away from him. He can get annoying. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out all of our stuff on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Check out our rankings, our top 200 for Matt. The Dynasty rankings are awesome. Check out all of our articles. It's a really great site for info and such. Check me out on baseballhq.com. I'm a daily matchups columnist for them. You can check me out every Saturday, I believe, this season. So please make sure you tune into that. And also check out our prospect show, all of our other podcasts that we have during the week, Monday through Friday. We usually always have a new show out for you. So yes, please check it all out and please rate and review all of those as well. For Matt, Doug, and myself, thank you for listening and good luck in your drafts. Every night I get-